Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David Mills, the 12th hour apostolic Sabbatarian congregation. I was out the 12th hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is January 20, 2023. It was the 9th day of Shabbat 2027. We will start our second service today with a song, and then we're going to go into our sermon entitled The Call of the Abraham. Okay, it says The Call of Abraham. This is chapter 11, Patriarchs and Prophets. After the dispersion, from the Babel, Babylon, Ur of the Chaldees, again became well nigh universal, and the Yahweh finally left the hardened transgressors to follow their evil ways, while he chose Abraham of the line of Shem. Shem is the firstborn of Noah. Okay, and made him the keeper of his law. When he says his law, it's talking about the sanctuary of truth, believe and practice. And that's talking about keeping all the feast days that's given unto Israel, starting with the seventh day Sabbath, the unleavened bread, which comes Passover once a year, Pentecost once a year, atonement, seventh month, once a year, Feast of Tabernacles, Solemn Assembly, once a year. You also have a Solemn Assembly for the unleavened bread of the Passover. Okay, so all those holy days come to 70 holy days in a year. Okay, it says so after the dispersion from Babel, idolatry again became well nigh universal. So that is today. Idolatry is universal today. And the Yahweh finally left the hardened transgressors for the following of their evil ways, while he chose Abraham of the line of Shem, firstborn son of Noah, this side of the flood, and made him as a keeper of his law for the future generation. What does it say in Galatians 3:9? If you belong unto the Yahshua, then are you Abraham's seed, and heirs according unto the promise. For the Abraham had grown up in the midst of the superstition of the heathenism, even his father's household, by whom the knowledge of the Yahweh had been preserved, were yielding unto the seductive influences surrounding them, and they served other gods. Pay attention to that word preserved, P-R-E-S-E-R-V-E-D, it's important. So it says, then the Yahweh, for they served other gods other than the Yahweh, but the true faith, okay, was not to become extinct. So what does it mean, the true faith? True religion? True what? True doctrine? How about doctrine? For the true doctrine of the word faith, what it means is faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant that Yahweh made with Adam, Abraham, Noah, Enoch. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, David, Yeshua, carrying down the cross. Okay. So the faith, what? So he says, but the true faith in the brother of us in heaven was not to become extinct. Let's do it again. For the true faith in the blood of the Yeshua, representing the blood of the everlasting covenant, is not to become extinct in our day. However, for the Yahweh has ever preserved as a remnant for the serving Him. For the Adam, Seth, Enoch, Methuselah, Noah, Shem, and the unbroken line has preserved from the age unto the age as the precious revealings of His will. For the son of the terror became the inheritor of this holy trust. Idolatry invited him on every side, but in the vain. Faithful among the faithless, uncorrupted by the prevailing apostasy, he steadfastly adhered unto the worship of the one true Yahweh. For the Yahweh is nigh unto all them that call upon Him. Unto all that call upon Him in the truth. Okay, the only truth you have is present truth. Any time that you start to read truth, you will always have the truth, present truth. Okay. For He commanded His will unto Abraham. Okay. And gave him a distinct knowledge of the requirements of His law and of the salvation that would be accomplished through the Yeshua. For there was given unto Abraham the promise, especially dear unto the people of that age, of a numerous posterity and of the national greatness. I will make of thee as a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. Let's read that last sentence all over again. For I will make of thee of the greatest nation on earth. That's the land of Israel. That's the name of Israel. And He said, I will make of you as the greatest nation on earth, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And unto this was added the assurance, precious above every other, for the inheritor of the faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant of the new and living right, Hebrews 10:19-20, that of His line, and also we want to bring in Galatians chapter 3, the whole chapter. It tells inside of Hebrews chapter 10, faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant. Galatians chapter 3 deals almost exclusively with Abraham and his believing in the blood of the everlasting covenant. That's what made him successful, to be the progenitor of the righteous line, okay, down to the very end. Okay, it says that. Inheritor of the faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant, that of His line, as the Redeemer of the world should come. Let's do that again. And unto this was added the assurance, precious above every other, and for the inheritor of the faith of the everlasting children, that of his line, Abraham's line, the Redeemer, as the Redeemer of the world should come. Now, listen up. Let's do that again. That of his line for the Redeemer of the Israel of the world should come. And this shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Now let's talk about every race of people. Every race of people on this earth. There is a remnant among them, which is called the family of Yahweh as well. They're going to be blessed in Abraham's seed if they lay hold of this, of his covenant. Yet, as the first condition of the full covenant, there is to be a test of the faith for a sacrifice was demanded. Okay. For the message of Yahweh came unto Abraham, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee. And the order that the Yahweh might qualify him for his great work as the keeper of the sacred oracle, Abraham must be separated from the association of his early life for the influence of the kindred, parentheses, I'll put my part, idol worshippers and friends would interfere with the training which the Yahweh purpose to give unto his servant. Now, that Abraham was in a special sense connected with the heaven, he must dwell among the strangers. His character must be particular, different from all the world. He could not even explain his course of the action so as to be understood by his friends. Spiritual things are spiritually discerned, and his motives and actions are not comprehended by his idolatrous tendencies. By the faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out not knowing whether he went. Abraham's unquestioning obedience is one of the most striking evidences of faith to be found in all the Bible. Unto him, faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant was the substance of the things hoped for, the evidence of the things not seen. Now that's in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. Jesus. They could have well added that verse here at that time. That would have been a perfect place to have added it. Relying upon the divine promise without the least outward assurance of its fulfillment. For he abandoned home and kindred and native land and went forth he knew not whether the follower of Yahweh should live by the faith in the blood. He became a sojourner in the land of the promise, as in a land not of his own. By the dwelling in the tents with the faithful Isaac and Jacob, as the heirs of him of the same promise. Oh boy, what was that promise? That their seed would inherit the promised land of Israel in the last day. That was the same promise that Isaac and Jacob inherited from Abraham. So their seed would inherit. But it was no right test that was thus brought upon the Abraham, no small sacrifice that was required of him. There were strong ties to bind him unto his country, his kindred, and his home. But he did not hesitate for the obeying of the call, for he had no question to ask concerning the land of the promise, whether the soil was fertile and the climate healthful, whether the country offered agreeable surroundings and would afford opportunities for the amassing of the wealth. For the Yahweh has spoken, and his servant must obey. That's the thing today. Yahweh has spoken to this servant, Elijah David, and it must be obeyed. I will give the word, and we will proceed to do what it says. For the happiest place on the earth for him was the place that Yahweh had him to be. Many are still tested, as with Abraham, but they do not hear the voice of Yahweh speaking directly from the heavens, but he calls them by the teachings of his word and the events of his providence, that they may be required for the abandonment of a career that promises wealth and honor, to leave the congenial and profitable association and supports from kindred. But I have gone through this myself. I have left one agreeable place after another. The follower Yahweh has led me. He led me from my hometown. He led me from there. 1961. When I come out of the Navy in 59, I went to my hometown and lived with my father and mother. One day he says, "Get up, get out of here." Oh, I didn't want to, but I did. I went to a neighboring town, 50 miles away, and I'd already met a woman over there, and I joined up with her, and we got married, and we had children. And one day he says, "Get up, get out of here. Get into the place I showed you." And you open up Fort Worth and Dallas area. And lo and behold, I went there and spent 20 years witnessing to the Adventists down there. And then after 20 years, I went and he says, "Get up and get out of here and go back to Kermit, Texas," which is about 50 miles from my hometown, Andrews. And I went out there. I spent 20 years, and I loved it. It was watermelon country, and that's my first love when it comes to farming. watermelons and cantaloupes and onions. And then one day he says, get up and get out of here. So I got up and got out of there and get into a land that I'll show you. So he brought me back to the Austin, Texas area. For Yahweh has a work for them to do. For a life of the ease and the full influence of the friends and kindred will hinder the development of the very traits essential for its accomplishment. For he calls them away from the human influences and aid and leads them to feel the need of his help and to depend upon him alone that he may reveal himself unto them, who is ready at the call of the providence to renounce cherished plans and familiar association, who will accept the new duties and enter untried fields, doing Yahweh's work with the firm and willing heart for the serious sake, counting his losses gain. For he who will do this has the faith of the Abraham and will share with him that far more exceeding and eternal weight of the glory, with which the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared. For the call from the heaven first came unto Abraham while he dwelt in the earth of the Chaldees, and in the obedience unto the call, he removed unto the Haran. This for his father's family accompanied him, for with their idolatry, they united the worship of the true Yahweh. Okay. So his father brought his idols with him, but coming, because Abraham wanted to bring his father with him, take care of him, so his father had to bring his idolatry. He's going to keep it connected to true worship. Okay, they united their worship of the true Yahweh with that idolatry. Here Abraham remained till the death of Terah. So Abraham's father died then. Yahweh just got rid of him. He said, stop right here until your father dies and bury him and leave him and all his idols right behind you. You're not taking him into the land. Who will accept now the duties and enter the untried field? I'll read this again. This is a question asked today. Who will accept the new duty and enter the untried field, doing Yahweh's work with firm and willing heart for the Yeshua's sake, continuing his losses, turning his losses gain? He who will do this has the faith of the Abraham and will share with him that far more exceeding and eternal weight of the glory with which the sufferings of the present time are not worthy to be compared. Now, when I was called to get into a land that I showed in, I wasn't even worshiping Yahweh. I had settled down in my father's house, and I said, I'm not going to go to church, Adventist church. I'm not interested in it. I'm not going to go back to church. But Yahweh changed me on them. Now, how can So when he called me to get into a place, I went not knowing where I was going, really what I was going there for, other than I ended up working in his vineyard for him and for his people. Okay. For the call from heaven first came unto Abraham while he dwelt in the Ur of the Chaldees, and in the obedience unto it he removed unto the Haran. This far his father's family accompanied him, for with their idolatry they united the worship of the true Yahweh. And here Abraham remained till the death of his father Terah, that from his father's grave the divine voice bade him go forward. For his brother Nahor, with his household, come unto their home and their idols. If they come unto their home and their idols, so they weren't candidates to go. Besides, Sarah, the wife of Abraham, only Lot, as the son of Haran, long since dead, chose to share the patriarch's pilgrim life. Yet it was a large country that set out from Mesopotamia. Abraham already possessed extensive flocks and herds, the riches of the East. And he was surrounded by a numerous body of the servants and retainers. He was departing from the land of his father, never to return, and he took with him all that he had. And the substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran. Oh, he had gathered some souls in Haran. Among them were many led by the higher considerations than those of the service and self-answer. During their stay in Haran, both Abraham and Sarah had led others to the worship and service of the true Yahweh. These attached themselves unto the patriarch household and accompanied him unto the land of the promise. And they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. Today it is called the land of Israel. For the place where they first tarried was Shechem. Okay, under the shade of the oaks of the Moreh. Okay. In a wide grassy valley with its olive groves and gushing springs, between the Mount Ebal on the one side and Mount Gerizim on the other, Abraham made his encampment. For it was a fair and goodly country that the patriarchs had entered, a land of the brooks of the water of the fountains and the depths that sprang out of the valleys and hills, a land of the wheat and barley and vines and the fig trees and the pomegranates, a land of the olive oil and honey. But unto the worship of the Yahweh, a heavy shadow rested upon that we are here in a spiritual plane. For the Canaanite was then in the land. That's the descendants of Ishmael, the Muslims, people today, the half-brother to Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham had reached the goal of his hopes to find a country occupied by an alien race and overspread with the idolaters. In the groves were set up the altars of the false gods, and human sacrifices were offered up on the neighboring heights, while he climbed unto the divine promise, he was not without the distressful force buildings that had pitched his tent. Then the Yahweh appeared unto the Abram and said, "Unto thy seed will I give this land." For his faith was strengthened by this assurance that the divine presence was with him, that he was not left unto the mercy of the wicked. And there builded he an altar unto the other, who appeared unto him still a wayfarer. He soon removed unto a spot near the Bethel, and again erected an altar and called upon the name of the other. For the Abraham, as a friend of the Yahweh, set us an example, a worthy example, for his worthy life of the prayer. Wherever he pitched his tent first, he sat it, but set up his altar, calling all within his encampment unto the morning and the evening sacrifice. There's that morning and evening sacrifice. These are the true sacred hours of the day, which are special for the worshiping of the true Yahweh. Have special blessings and special meaning. When his tent was removed, the altar remained. In the following years, there were those among the surviving Canaanites who received instruction from the Abraham. And whenever one of these came to that altar, he knew who had been there before him, and when he had pitched his tent, he repaired the altar and there worshiped the living Yahweh. But Abraham continued for the journey of the south, and again his faith was tested. For the heavens withheld their rain, for the brooks ceased to flow in the valley, and the grass withered on the plain. For the flocks and the herds found no pasture, and the starvation threatened the whole encampment. Did not the patriarch now question the leadings of the providence? Did he not look back with the longing for the plenty of the Chaldean plains? All were eagerly watching for the scene of what the Abraham would do. As the trouble after the trouble came upon him, so long as his confidence appeared unshaken, they felt that there was a hope, for they were assured that Yahweh was his friend and that he was still guiding him. Same thing today. Okay, so the Abraham could not explain the leading to the providence, for he had not realized his expectation, but he held fast unto the promise, I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. With the earnest prayer, he considered how to preserve the life of the people and his flock, but he would not allow the circumstances to shake his faith in the Yahweh's word. For the speaking of the famine, he went down into the Egypt, for he did not forsake the Canaan. In his extremity turned back unto the Chaldean land from which he came. For there was no scarcity of the bread, but he sought a temporary refuge as near as possible unto the land of the promise, and intending shortly to return where Yahweh had placed him. So Yahweh in his providence had brought this trial upon Abraham for the teaching him the lessons of the submission, patience, and faith, a lesson that were to be placed on record for the benefit of all who should afterwards be called to endure affliction, for Yahweh leads his children by a way that they know not, that he does not forget or cast off those who put their trust in him, for he permitted that. Affliction to come upon on Job, but he did not forsake him. He allowed the beloved John to be exiled unto the lonely Patmos, but the Son of Yahweh met him there, and his vision was filled with the scenes of the immortal glory of Yahweh from his child to assail his people, that by their constancy and obedience they themselves may be spiritually enriched, and that their example may be a source of the strength for the others. I know the thought that I think toward you, saith Yahweh, thoughts of the peace and not of evil, for the very trials that test our faith most severely and make it seem that Yahweh has forsaken us are the leaders personally to Yahshua, the Son, that we may by they all our burdens at his feet, as Yahshua's feet, the Son, and experience the peace which he will give us and the exchange. This is, as we continue, for the Yahweh has always tried his people in the furnace of the affliction, for it is in the heat of the furnace that the dross is separated from the true gold of the Christian character. Okay. And a verse of a song that I wrote one time, it says, in this world in which we live, oftentimes we must forgive many things and try to really understand that it's not the one who takes, but the one that the Yahweh remakes, and the character is the measure of a man. The key word is character. So the Yahshua watches the test that he knows what is needed for the purifying of the precious metal, that it may reflect the resilience of his love. It is for the radiance of his love. Let's do that again. For the Yahshua watches the test, for he knows what is needed for the purifying of the precious metal, that he may reflect the radiance of his love. For it is by the close testing trials that the Yahweh disciplines his servants. For he sees that some have powers which may be used in the advancement of his work, and he puts these persons upon the trial. In his providence, he brings them into the positions that test their character and reveal the defects and weaknesses that have been hidden from their own knowledge. For he gives them opportunity for the correcting of these defects and for the fitting of themselves for his service. For he shows them their own weakness and touches them and teaches them to lean upon him, for he is their only help and safeguard. Thus his object is attained. They are educated, trained, and disciplined for the preparing for the fulfillment of the grand purpose for which their powers were given them. When the Yahweh calls them into the action, they are ready, and the heavenly angels can unite with them in their work to be accomplished on the earth. During his stay in Egypt, Abraham gave evidence that he was not free from the human weakness and imperfection, and the concealing of the fact that Sarah was his wife, he betrayed a distrust of the divine terror, of the lack of that lofty faith and courage so often and nobly exemplified in his life. Sarah was fair to look upon, and he doubted not that the dusty Egyptian would covet this beautiful stranger, and that in order to secure her, they would not scruple to slay her husband. He reasoned that he was not guilty of the falsehood in the representing Sarah as his sister, for she was the daughter of his father, though not of his mother. But this concealment of the real relation between them was a deception. No deviation from the strict integrity can meet the Yahweh's approval. Through the Abraham's lack of the faith, Sarah was placed in the great peril, for the king of Egypt, being informed of her beauty, caused her to be taken to his palace, intending to make her his wife. But Yahweh, in his great mercy, protected Sarah by the sentence judgment upon the royal household. By this means, the monarch learned the truth in the matter, and indignant at the deception practiced upon him, he reproved Abraham and restored unto him his wife, saying, "What is this that thou hast done unto me? Why saidest thou, she is my sister, so I might have taken her to me for wife? Now therefore, behold thy wife, take her and go thy way." For the Abraham had been greatly favored by the king. Even now, Pharaoh would permit no harm to be done unto him or his company, but ordered a guard for conducting them and the safety out of his dominion. At this time, laws were made prohibiting the Egyptians from the intercourse with the foreign shepherds in any such familiarity as the eating or drinking with them. For the Pharaoh's dismissal of the Abraham was kind and generous, but he bade him leave Egypt, for he dared not permit him to remain. He had ignorantly been about to do him a serious injury, but Yahweh had interposed and saved the monarch from the committing so great a sin. For the Pharaoh saw in this stranger a man whom the Yahweh of the heaven honored, and he feared to have in his kingdom one who was so evidently under the divine favor. Should Abraham remain in Egypt, his increasing wealth and honor would be likely to excite the envy or covetousness of the Egyptians, and some inquiry might be done him for which the monarch would be held responsible, and which might again bring judgment upon the royal house. For the warning that had been given unto the Pharaoh proved a protection unto the Abraham in his after intercourse with the heathen people, for the matter could not be kept secret, and it was seen that the Yahweh, whom the Abraham worshipped, would protect his servant, and that any injury done him would be avenged. It is a dangerous thing to wrong one of the children of the King of Heaven. For the psalmist refers unto this chapter and to Abraham's experience, whom he says in the speaking of the chosen people, that Yahweh reproved kings for their sakes, saying, "Touch not mine anointed, and do my people no harm." There is an interesting similarity between the Abraham's experience in Egypt and that of his posterity centuries later. Both went down into Egypt for an account of a famine, and both sojourned there through the manifestation of the divine judgments in their behalf. The fear of them fell upon the Egyptians, and enriched by the gifts of the heathen, they went out with the great substance. Okay, that brings us to the end of chapter 11. Okay. It says, In chapter 12, it says, Abraham in the land of Canaan, which today is called the land of Israel. Okay, it says, Abraham returned. It says, unto the Canaan, very rich in the cattle and the silver, and in the gold. Lot was still with him, and again they came unto Bethel and pitched their tents by the altar that they had before erected. For they soon found that the increased possession brought the increased trouble and the list of hardships and trials. For they had dwelt together in their harmony, but in their prosperity there was a danger of the strife between them. For the pasturing was not sufficient for the flocks and herds of both, and the frequent disputes among the herdsmen were brought for the settlement and to their masters. It was evident that they must separate. Abraham was the lost senior in the years, and his superior in the relation, and the wealth, and in the position, yet he was the first to propose plans for the preserving peace, although the whole land had been given him by the Yahweh himself. He courteously waived this right. If there be no strife, he said, between me and thee, and between my herdsmen and thy herdsmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go unto the right. So if thou depart unto the right hand, then I will go unto the left. Hear the noble, unselfish spirit of Abraham was displayed. How many singular circumstances would at all hazards cling unto their individual rights and professions and preferences? How many households has been rent asunder? How many churches have been divided, making the cause of the truth a byword and a reproach among the wicked? That there be no strife between me and thee, said Abraham, for we be brethren. Not only by the natural relationship, but as the worshippers of the true Yahweh, for the children of the Yahweh, the world over are the one family and the same spirit of the love and conciliation should govern them. Be kindly affection one unto another with the brotherly love, and the honor preferring one another is that teaching of our Savior, for the cultivation of a uniform courtesy a willingness to do unto others as we would have them to do unto us, but a knowledge to half the ills of the lot. For the spirit of self aggrandizement is the spirit of Satan, but the heart in which the love of the Yahshua is cherished will possess that charity which seeketh not her own. Such will heed the divine injunction, that not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Although Lot owed his prosperity unto his connection with the Abraham, he manifested no gratitude to his benefactor. Courtesy would have dictated that he yield the choice unto Abraham, but instead of this, he selfishly endeavored to grasp all its advantages. He lifted up his eyes, and behold, all the plain of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, even as the garden of the Yahweh, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar, for the most fertile region in all of Palestine was the Jordan Valley, reminding the beholders of the lost paradise, and equaling the beauty and the productiveness of the now enriched plains they had so lately left. There were cities also wealthy and beautiful, inviting unto the profitable traffic in their crowded marts, dazzled with the vision of the world again. Lot overlooked the moral and the spiritual evils that would be encountered there, for the inhabitants of the plain were sinners before the Yahweh exceedingly. But of this he was ignorant, or knowing gave it but little weight. He chose all the plain of the Jordan and pitched his tent toward Sodom. How little did he foresee the terrible results of that selfish choice. After separation from the Lord, Abraham again received from the Yahweh as a promise of the whole country. Soon after this, he removed unto Hebron, pitching his tent under the oaks of the Mamre, and erecting beside it an altar unto the Yahweh. And the free air of those upland plains, with their olive groves and vineyards, their fields of the waving grain, and their wide pasture grounds of the encircling hills, he dwelt well content with his simple patriarchal life. And leaving unto Lot the perilous luxury of the veil of Sodom. For Abraham was honored by the surrounding nations as a mighty prince and a wise and able chief. He did not shut away his influence from his neighbors. His life and character, and the marked contrast unto those of the worshippers of the island, exerted a telling influence in the favor of the true faith. His allegiance unto Yahweh was unswerving, while his affability and benevolence inspired confidence and friendship, and his unaffected greatness commanded respect and honor. This brings me further to this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archives. Hear this message. We're going to close now with a song. Whosoever will, whosoever is, it shall shout the sound. Send the blessed tidings all the world around. Spread the joyful news wherever man is found. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, whosoever will, send the proclamation over Bethlehem and hell. There's a loving Father of the wonder hall. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever cometh need not delay. Now the door is open, enter while ye may. Yeshua is the truth, the only living way. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, whosoever will, send the proclamation over Bethlehem and hell. 'Tis a loving Father calls a wanderer home. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, the promise is secure. Whosoever will, forever must endure. Whosoever will, is not forevermore. Whosoever will, may he come. Whosoever will, whosoever will, send the proclamation over Ben Hill. There's a loving Father, calls a wanderer home. There's a loving Father, may come.